You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
All right, coming up.
Do you think he was gay?
I don't know. I mean, I've heard stories.
Welcome to A Gay and a Non-Gay. I'm James Barr and I'm gay.
Yes, I'm Dan Hudson. I'm not non-gay. I don't know why
You're
I messed that up.
You're not non-gay.
I'm not non-gay. Well, who knows?
No, you are non-gay.
I'm non-gay. And Crystal Hefner is in the studio with us.
Amazing.
Hi.
Yeah, very exciting. She's just brought out a book about her time in the Playboy Mansion, which is called Just Say Good Things. And I've read it like pretty much non-stop over the last day.
You read it?
Absolutely wild, this book.
Thank you for reading it.
It's crazy. Oh, no, I honestly couldn't put it down. What was it that made you decide to start saying not just good things?
Oh, my gosh. Well, after the mansion, I went through like 5 years of therapy and realized the place kind of messed me up more than I thought it did.
Wow.
And so I thought it was important to tell the truth, maybe help some other women along the way.
As a gay person, I don't really have much of a vibe for the Playboy Mansion. It's not something that was really ever on my radar growing up, obviously. I would suspect Dan here was very much aware of the Playboy Mansion's work.
I mean,
a straight guy, right?
Sort of. No, I mean,
atoning.
I don't really know what goes on there. I didn't until I read the book. And I'm still a bit, I still don't really understand. What do you do all day in the Playboy Mansion? Because obviously you've got to maintain this ludicrous level of attractiveness and fitness and whatnot.
Yeah.
So is everyone just in the gym all day or like?
Hair salon, gym.
Right. Wow.
I tried to get some time for myself, but I had to be back by 6 o'clock every day pretty much. So yeah, there's not much you can do in the day. Can't go too far.
But what's a typical day then?
Wake up, order breakfast from the kitchen, but don't order too much breakfast because you might get fat. And
yeah.
You can't get fat. Made that mistake once. yeah.
Too many pancakes.
Yeah. Hef was like, oh, you got to tone up.
That's like, disgusting.
I'm like, oh no, I'm slipping. I better. But now I would have just thrown something at him probably. But yeah, you didn't know better. It was a time like pre-Me Too. We didn't have a lot of the terms we have now. So I just didn't realize a lot of the things at the time.
So Hugh Hefner, I'm trying not to call him Hef. I mean, you call him Hef in the book, but it feels like a term of endearment. Do you know
Does
what I mean?
Does it?
Yeah.
The media and everyone called him Hef, and he called himself Hef.
Yeah.
Because he went from Hugh Hefner, who he saw as this dorky high school kid, to Hef. And that's like the cool name that he took on some other like persona.
Right. Okay. Well, Hef died a month before Me Too, which is...
Lucky.
Just in time.
Yeah. What do you think would have happened if he was still alive when that all kicked off?
I think he would still have been doing what he did.
I think so,
but I think a more quiet way.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think he would have been in trouble? Do you think people would have come out the woodwork and said, actually, yeah.
Potentially.
Would you have come out?
Yeah, I think the brainwashing was wearing off around the time.
Right.
You were married to Hugh Hefner, but you never actually said yes, right? So he asked you to...
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds ridiculous to say out loud, but so he asks you to marry you. You never actually say yes. It's just assumed that of course you did.
Yeah, he just gave me a ring and he said, I hope it fits. And all these cameras were there. And I'm like, oh, you know, I can't really say no. And maybe he just wants a good PR story before he dies. I don't know. But
And so that was it.
Yeah, like either I leave tomorrow, which I wasn't prepared, or we're going to go along with this. And it never felt real to me. I even picked out a pink dress because I thought, oh, when I get married for real, I'll wear white.
Oh, wow.
It's very interesting.
So it's like your subconscious knew. You just hadn't quite faced it yet, so like you were protecting yourself.
Yeah, like my inner voice was probably trying to tell me something, and I'm just...
When would you say is the first moment you really realized then that I don't really want to be here?
It was pretty early in when I started getting controlled. He would tell me, you know, wear a more colorful shirt, wear a different nail color, you know, fix your roots. They're growing in. Wear the flag, which is the Playboy bunny head logo. And so I'm like, oh, I'm being a bit like controlled emotionally and then physically and then financially as well. Like he would give us an allowance and he would hand it out like one by one, the bills. And yeah, it just a little bit felt like, you know, like begging for money. It was weird. But he liked that routine. He liked when women were helpless and needed him, made him feel like a man, I guess.
See, I mean, I don't like straight men. No offense, Dan. Do you think a lot of straight men have that kind of like, because he created this whole scene, right? And
yes.
Relationship with sex that men maybe have taken on. Some
toxic.
Like,
And I don't get on with most straight men either after that situation. But yeah, I think he created this whole...
like a brand.
Yeah, and it's like Playboy Freedom, but it's Hugh Hefner's Playboy. It's like whatever he liked was in the magazines, and that kind of dictated the culture, and, you know, all these women got breast implants they didn't need to, and, you know, it's like, did he help things or did he hurt things?
And that's the question, because I guess a lot of people would say, oh, he changed the game for the sex industry, but actually, yeah, he's created a version that has had a knock-on effect to millions of women around the world who felt like they had to... like live up to the same ideals.
It makes you feel not good enough as you are. And it made me feel that way. You know, I looked up to Jenny McCarthy, Pam Anderson, Carmen Electra. I'm like, okay, what do they have in common? They all have implants. So I'm like, to be worthy, that's what I have to do. It's all out of Hef's mind.
Yeah. Where did he get all this from?
I don't know. I think Hef really went into like the pinup girls.
Yeah.
Because he was born in 1926.
Right.
So he was into those like pinup type of things.
Yeah.
I think that's where he got like the voluptuous type of look, but voluptuous but skinny at the same time. So yeah. How do you do that? You can't. You have to get surgery.
And was he always like this from day one of the Playboy Mansion, or was it something that sort of happened over time?
I think he was always like this since the beginning.
Right.
Since the beginning of the magazine, and he sought out a specific type of women and controlled them. Even, you know, I think back to the very first magazine, it was Marilyn Monroe, and he bought her photos from a calendar company, and she didn't have a say about being in the magazine, and she didn't get paid. And it's just kind of been ongoing.
He's buried in the same plot as Marilyn Monroe, right?
Yes, but he was buried right next to her. And I remember when he was getting ill, he told me, like, make sure I'm buried next to Marilyn Monroe. Like, you know my wishes. I don't care about funeral. I won't be there. Just make sure I'm next to her.
That's so creepy. I mean, I know you're dead, but, like, that's creepy.
Why, right? Why
know.
Do you want to
yeah,
be right
like,
next
what,
to
yeah,
her?
Yeah, what are you going
to
do?
Like, oh, I belong with her because she started the magazine off for me.
I mean, yeah, it's like me. It's like me saying, can I be next to Zac Efron? never met the guy.
Yeah,
but
he never met Marilyn.
No. Oh, no. Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, even more weird.
Yeah.
Although I would quite like to be buried next to
Zac Efron. We'll all be buried next to Zac Efron.
Still very much alive, though, at the point.
We'll make everyone we'll remind her. Only say good things about us and bury us next to Zac Efron.
That's so creepy, though.
Yeah.
Is it difficult for you personally? Like, you're doing a lot of interviews, you're talking about this a lot. Mm. And as someone that has been through therapy and has a lot of trauma from different things, which we don't need to get into, it is hard digging it up, like having to talk about things again
yeah.
or turn it into art. That's difficult. So how are you yeah. doing with that?
It has been healing writing the book and talking about it. But then some people want to try and have like a gotcha or
yeah.
ask me questions that... the answers are complicated, so that's been hard.
I've watched a few of the interviews that you've done, and it feels like certain people are trying to catch you out with some of the questions or give you a hard time.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is?
Yeah, I don't know. It made me feel a little bit attacked. The very first one I did with the I forget his name. He's on Strictly. But yeah, he's like, why?
Right.
But as we're talking, I'm like, I don't think he's read the book. He wouldn't have asked me certain things.
And yeah, because that actually is answered lengthily in the book, to be fair.
Yes.
Isn't it?
This is the question of like, why did you stay?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that is just like a dumb question for me anyway, because people that have been in bad situations always get asked that question. You should know that. If you're a journalist, you should know that that is not a question you ask a victim or a survivor of a situation, because it's a complicated answer.
Yeah, and I've had so many people message me, men and women, saying, I was in an abusive relationship. I was, you know, financially abused, all these things. And it's complicated. It's more than that. And people shouldn't be drilling you on that. And I'm sorry. So I just appreciate those people that actually care.
Yeah. I mean,
and it was a different time.
Yeah.
During this time, Hugh Hefner was completely idolized.
And also, people aren't just bad. Like, they have good qualities too, right? So it's
yeah.
very complicated to just be like, oh, I'm going to go now. You're in it. You can't just decide.
Like, where do I go? Like, what do I do? I don't know. I guess this is my life. Maybe this is just what's chosen for me.
And the brainwashing you mentioned, and the shame that we all just carry around internally about our bodies and who we are. Like, yeah, is this the best I'm going to get? It's tough.
Just try and enjoy it. People would, you know, kill to be in your situation. Stuff like that. You just convince yourself.
And you did leave, but then you went back.
Yeah.
Which I guess people are struggling to get their head around.
Yeah, and yeah, that's part of it. I left. I ended up in another toxic relationship. Hef's secretary, Mary, called me and said, Hef misses you. It hasn't been the same. And I'm like, oh, wow, like he needs me. It made me feel like, okay, I can go back and maybe do things a bit differently this time. And I did. And I started making my own money the second time around. And I eventually just felt more powerful. And toward the end, I did have plenty of money. You know, I owned homes and all kinds of things. And I remember telling my mom I felt so trapped. And she's like, leave. You have plenty of money. You're fine. And I said, oh, I can't leave him. He needs me. So I don't know if that's some form of Stockholm syndrome, but yeah. I felt sorry for him. And I was there until he died.
It's kind of the fallacy of control, too. Like, you're going back, but you're deciding to go back. And I'm sure that that's a thing in psychology. If you've been abused, you sort of end up repeating the pattern, and hopefully the pattern gets smaller. But like, if you're choosing that, then it's a different type of abuse, and then you're controlling it. So it's sort of, I don't know, it's twisted.
It's some like trying to take my power back or something like that. But I realized after the mansion and I tried to date, I ended up in two more relationships that were, you know, manipulative and controlling. And you know, they were struggling musicians and actors. I'm like, oh, they're manipulating me, controlling me. And I'm paying the bills. Like, this is terrible.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
So Hugh Hefner didn't think that women could be friends with men, and presumably that, well, in fact, it does include gay men, right?
He was threatened by all men.
So what's his problem with the gays?
I think he probably thought that someone was just pretending
to be gay, right?
To be gay, to what, sleep with one of his girlfriends. I don't.
Wow.
It was odd. I mean, to me, that just screams insecure.
Do you think he was gay?
I don't know. I've heard stories, but
really?
When I was there, I didn't see anything like that.
That would be very shocking.
I did ask him. I said, oh, have you had, you know, like orgies or things like that? I was curious. And he loved talking about himself. And he said, yeah. And I'm like, oh, okay, like women in the bed, men in the bed. He's like, both.
Wow.
Whatever that means, I don't know. I didn't see it.
So he had a man in the bed, but we don't know whether they touched or not.
I don't know.
Oh, well, good for him.
I guess when you're having sex so much, you're like, let's have 5 people. Let's have 10 people. Right. Let's have 5 men tonight. Yeah. Let's have, you know, whatever.
I was at a weekend recently, and basically there was this big orgy, and I heard that this guy afterwards said to a girlfriend of his, my friend, oh, we can go further if you want. I mean, I'm sort of bored of men now. I've had sex with like 30 guys this weekend. So if you want to have sex, I'll give it a go. So
wow.
I think it probably does come a point
where
you're like so over it that you just give it a go.
Yeah.
Oh, well, good for him, which is an odd thing to say.
What was his sort of stance on LGBT rights?
Oh, he was very like pro, LGBT. One of his sons is gay and the other one is bisexual, so... Yeah, and those are the two I get along with the best.
Right.
The other one's a bit narcissistic, so I just stick with the two cool ones.
I want to ask you how you feel about the sex industry now, really, especially with things like OnlyFans. Like, it's so different to that Playboy era. How do you feel the industry has changed? Do you think it's a good thing that it's become a little bit more available to everyone?
I think... it's changed in good ways where people aren't controlled anymore. Like, these people can start their own OnlyFans and do what they want and have their own niche. There's so many different things you can find. There's something for everyone, right? So I think it's good that people are taking power into their own hands.
When he died, there was a lot of positive coverage of him in the press. Mm. But not from GLAAD. So Sarah K. Ellis from GLAAD says, it's alarming how media is attempting to paint Hugh Hefner as a pioneer or social justice activist because nothing could be further from reality. Do you agree with that?
At the time, I didn't. And at the time, I put out a statement that was very positive. But reflecting back, yeah, I agree. I mean, I remember when Holly's book came out and I was at the mansion and I'm like, oh, how dare she? You know, that's so...
Really?
But now I'm like, I'm like, oh, she shouldn't say anything bad, you know? But now I'm like, oh, everything she's saying is true.
So there's an episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm at the Playboy Mansion. And so Larry David is there. And just wondering, do people like that, I don't know if I want to know the answer really, but like, do people like that know what was going on day to day?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
They knew that people were being controlled and coerced and whatnot.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
They all knew.
Great.
I don't really like Larry David, especially after that Elmo strangling the other day. It's interesting, though, because there's probably a lot of people implicated by what you just said about how visitors, etc., knew what was going on. And yet everyone's just like, they're just carrying on their lives like they weren't part of it, but they were part of it. Yeah. So is that quite difficult to watch from afar?
Yeah, it is. And... you know, those people have kind of dispersed, but they're still around, and Hollywood can be gross. And yeah, a lot of them were not good people.
Mm. There's a lot of stories of, and we've done an interview with a guy who made a documentary about this man who was a big Democrat donor in Hollywood, and he would coerce black guys back to his and basically control them. I guess having his own sort of Hefner style Playboy mansion with gays, and it just sounds like there's a lot of this going on, and it's quite dark.
It happens everywhere in Hollywood. Yeah.
Wow.
Absolutely. Lots of young people just get really taken advantage of or offered something that's not real, or, you know, it's very sad.
Yeah. How do we put a stop to that? How do we change this? What's your hope for that?
I think talking about it more. When people talk about it and tell stories of what happened to them, it helps, and helps people avoid it, I guess.
Yeah.
What do you want people to take from the book?
I think that when I went to the mansion, I didn't know who I was and lost myself completely there. I became Hef's shadow. I didn't know who I was anymore. And I think when you don't know who you are, it can be dictated to you by someone else. And when it's dictated, it could also be taken away. So I think it's important to come into your own power. Self-love is very important, and I think when you love and respect yourself, you don't let anyone else disrespect you. So I think it's important to really love yourself.
Love that. You're singing from my hymn book with that. And finally, for me, like, if there's people listening who are in situations that have even the slight echo of where you've been, like, do you have any advice for people on finding a way out?
I think just work on respecting yourself, because if you disrespect yourself so much, you won't let anyone else disrespect you. Also, save money any way that you can so you're not financially abused and stuck somewhere. Just stay strong.
Nice. All right. On that note, Crystal, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
What's next? What's next for you?
I have a farm in Hawaii, so I'm going to be going there after I'm done here in the UK.
Thank you for coming to visit us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.